Welcome to another Michigan Writers series. Tonight, we're talking with Joseph Featherstone, professor of teacher education at MSU, who has published Braces Cove, a new issue publication from last year, 2000, published by Western Michigan University, and Dennis Heinrichsen, Lansing Community College teacher of creative writing, author of Detail from the Garden of Earthly Delights, Akron series of poetry published by the University of Akron Press. Welcome, Joseph and Dennis. We're very pleased to have you here this evening and to talk to you about your writing before we actually hear it later in the evening. This is a little unusual. You'll be introduced formally at the reading, but why don't you right now just tell me a little bit about yourself? Joseph, why don't you start?
Okay. As you say, I work in a teacher ed program here. I run a teacher at one of the MSU teacher ed programs. But in past lives, I've been different kinds of writer. I used to be an editor of the New Republic, and I have always been some sort of writer. It's probably only in the last maybe 15 or 20 years that I've really gotten obsessed with poetry.
Dennis?
I too had a past life. Following graduate school, I moved to Boston and lived as a technical writer for a great many years, 10 years. Writing poetry all during that time, and it wasn't up until roughly 15 years ago or so that I came back to the Michigan area and began teaching, continuing to write there.
I've read both of your books, and they're very pleasing and interesting books of poetry. They have similarities in subject, I think. Perhaps I'm generalizing way too much. There's people, family, nature, religion, and the connections between them and affections for them. And your style, and don't be offended, but I think they're both very readable. You are approachable and evocative, and sometimes poets don't like to be told that they are accessible. How do you feel about that? I think that your poetry was wonderful.
I'm quite happy to hear that. I try to think in terms of creating a very vivid or very realistic human situation in a poem that allows the reader access, so that if the reader ever gets lost at any moment in the poem, there's still that thing to go back to, that frame.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to allow me a lot of room to move associatively within mm-hmm. a particular a human situation mm-hmm. without losing the reader. Mm-hmm. So I love hearing that.
I don't mean to imply that you're simple either. I mean, it's very rich, images and so on and everything. I like that associative element.
Yeah, I like the fact that it gets across. If it gets across, that's good news. It seems like that's part of your intention. You're signaling to the reader, and you'd like the reader to get the signal. I don't mind being obscure if I have a point to make. I mean, if there's some reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like the idea that you've sent a message to somebody and that they've really gotten it in human terms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I guess the human word that Dennis was using is there's the human voice and the human situations, and they're pretty universal. I was struck, like you, with the similarities
mm-hmm.
in a lot of our cross-cutting themes. It's just that the music is so different.
Oh, it is. You're quite your own man.
Yes. But it's lovely to see, you know, what Dennis does with the grandfather and what I
mm-hmm.
do,
and mm-hmm.
Things like that are mm-hmm. really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I think the maybe the important thing here is sometimes readers come to poetry thinking that it's sort of an academic endeavor rather than a human endeavor, where we as writers are trying to fight with, you know, real life, real world situations that, mm-hmm. that everyone can share in, and we choose to do it with language and with our own particular bent in, you know, in mm-hmm. language, but we're still fighting with stuff that we want to get across to someone. We want to, you want to give that idea away, or you want people to share in that. It's not an empty exercise in words or sounds or.
My remark was tongue in cheek, as you realize, but often people do like to poets like to be
well, it's a bit of a taboo.
Dense,
it's like
maybe
saying
is the
I'd
word.
Also like it to be really beautiful, which isn't sort of such a common you know, it's not a very fancy way to describe your aims, but I would mm-hmm. like it to be
yes.
beautiful. One of the things that I think connects these two quite different books and the two different, totally different voices, it seems to me, is that, and I was thinking about this when I was rereading Dennis's book, that both of these are small portraits of somebody's world.
Yes.
I mean, that, and it's the everydayness and the many-sidedness of someone's life that partly comes through. And I think that may be what also makes them accessible, which is that there's a sort of, they're like slides or songs out of a life. And in each case, the life is lived on some terms that everybody mm-hmm. knows about. Everybody knows if you have, mm-hmm. you know, somebody close to you dying.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows what the dailiness of things is like. And to sort of render that is part of, I guess, what I was trying to do. And I think looks to me like that's Dennis's part of his
yes.
angle.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. And Jay and I were talking about the reading tonight, in fact, and we're finding those areas where we were, you know, grandfather and mm-hmm. family, and seeing a lot of the same things there.
I have seen readers react off of each other, bounce off of each other in read. Is that what you intend this evening, or are you going to have segments, or...?
I think the answer is yeah. I had the opportunity to read with Jay at a gathering not so long ago, and know that there's some poems that correspond to mine in a nice way.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope he reads them, and I hope really? Reading first tonight that I set them up in an interesting way, because it's a for the audience, it's nice to mm-hmm. see that juxtaposition between how I treat something and how
mm-hmm.
Jay treats something.
Mm-hmm. And it's very alive, it's living,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, immediate. Well, this is the Michigan Writer Series, and I usually have a Michigan muse kind of question, but Joe, it doesn't seem like Michigan plays a very large part in yours, whereas Dennis's does. Does it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the
you
title...
You are Massachusetts
the title
Japan.
Is about a place in Massachusetts, and a lot of the poems connect to that place over the years. I've lived there off and on. On the other hand, there are a lot of poems that are Michigan. I mean, you know, life goes on wherever you...
Yes, yes, of course it does.
Wherever you live. I do think Michigan is making its way into more recent stuff that I've been writing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the alternative inauguration poem that I was proposing for President Bush was entitled Michigan.
Tell us about that.
As a sort of report from the state. But it's true, that collection has a, you know, a bit of a salty air to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Along with your youth in Japan.
The Japan connection. As I say, a Pacific... Atlantic and Pacific air to it. Actually, the first poem
it is salty,
starts
yes.
on the Atlantic, and the last poem ends on the Pacific.
I hadn't picked up on
that.
And Dennis, yours is Detail in Garden of Earthly Delights, and there are reproductions of details from the Hieronymus Bosch painting of the same name in that separates the chapters or precedes the chapters. So what is what's the idea of place there?
Well, the title poem of the book is really a simple way a poem about my backyard. I lived in a funeral home. I had two lots. I had innumerable trees, etc., and I kind of let it go a little wild, so it was garden-like in a Boschian kind of way. And the title poem picks up the Boschian elements of people hurting each other, in the sense that it begins to explore, counterpoints the backyard coming into spring with the electroshock therapy of my grandfather as he's dying, and so I have a kind of Eros Thanatos thing happening in that poem. And the book picks up on the Boschian themes, I think, that come out of the everyday. It's a poem about a child molester. It's a poem about a retarded uncle of mine. So there's sort of a here and there, not Boschian grotesqueness as is in that painting, but as I saw it in my life, that provided a kind of metaphoric current from beginning to end in the book. And I was living in a funeral home at the time, and that kind of gave a creepy aura to the whole thing. And the Grand River's in the book, and I just sort of took on, you know, the idea that enlightenment begins when you step outside your back door, and if you look closely and see with vision and try to find something beautiful and musical to say about it, you can find those things. So yeah, it's really about my backyard.
See, now with my Japanese background, I read Dennis's stuff and I see Midwestern Zen.
Name some favorite poets you each read, or you read, each of you.
I'm the list is very long. I'm reading Williams again, and finding that his voice intoxicates me. I'm reading his autobiography in Patterson again, and he was someone early on that I looked to as a model. Charles Wright's work dazzles me. A poet, Jack Gilbert, I love his work immensely. Emily Dickinson. And now the list is going to begin to open into all sorts of things. But it's, you know, you never get caught up, and you simply just need to read everything you can get your hands on.
Enriching yourself.
Yeah.
Continually with other poets.
Yeah, and going back to Williams, I think at a certain point for me, I need to go back to the wellsprings. When I was a young writer, Phil Levine, James Wright, Galway Canal, Book of Nightmares, The Branch, Oshawa Gather at the River, Phil Levine's Not This Pig were just, you know, books that I lived in and learned to write by. And as you continue in your career, you kind of you go your own way, and then every now and then you need to swing back, and it seems to me touch base with those wellsprings again. And Williams was part of that group, and I sort of feel myself going back just to gauge my growth as a writer, and then touch base with what their project was, and you know, reinvigorate my own work.
I can see Williams in your lines. I guess in my case, one big influence on me, partly as a poet, but partly as a teacher, was Seamus Heaney, who was my I took a class with him when I was getting really, really serious about poetry. And he really encouraged me. But also, I think, especially then, I think I was also struck by the Irish connection. I'm Irish-American, and it meant a lot to me. It actually hasn't panned out. That angle hasn't gone too far in my own writing. But if I think of you know, city poems and Midwest poems, I think of James Wright, too, as kind of a big, towering figure. everybody touches base with Williams. You have to. And also, I think Emily Dickinson.
Interesting.
That she's really pretty essential.
What works are in progress now? What can we look forward to seeing in print next after Grace's Cove and Detail from the Garden of Earthly Delights?
I've got a new manuscript done and out and about, but as we were speaking earlier, it's difficult to get things published, so it's out with begging bowl in hand. So we'll have to see.
I don't know yet about a manuscript. I have a lot of new poems, but we'll see where they go. This coming year, at some point, I think I'm due for a sabbatical. So a chunk of that would be surely writing poems.
Well, we look forward. Based on what I've read, I think that people would enjoy reading very much your work. And I know that they will enjoy the reading that is to come shortly. I will give you a chance to go out and greet some of the people now, and I thank you very much for talking with your web audience this evening.